This is Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kern. The primary election for Bloomington's mayoral race is less than 2 weeks away, and joining us at ISU's University Galleries are four of the five candidates in the race: Robert Fike, Diana Howman, Kevin Lauer, and Terry Renner. Candidate Ian Bain sent a surrogate to the debate tonight who wanted to read a statement at the outset of the debate. Those conditions were not allowed, according to a letter sent to each candidate ahead of time, so that surrogate was not allowed to speak. Ian Bain will not be participating in the debate this evening. Also joining us for this live broadcast is our audience. So we thank you for attending this forum tonight. This forum will feature questions developed by GLT News with input from those submitted at WGLT.org. There will also be time for opening and closing statements. This forum is co-sponsored by the McLean County League of Women Voters. The League's Becky Gropp and Mary Beth Taylor are serving as our timekeepers this evening. We determine the order by drawing numbers with the lowest number going first, and after that, rotating among the candidates alphabetically. We will ask as many questions as time permits during this one-hour forum. As moderator, I will call on candidates to make clarifying comments and pose follow-up questions as needed. That brings us to our opening statement, and you'll each have 1 minute for an opening statement, and we begin with Diana Howman, who drew the lowest number, and you have 1 minute for your statement.
Thank you, Willis, and thank you to WGLT and the League of Women Voters for hosting this forum tonight. I am Diana Howman, and I currently have the privilege of representing Ward 8 on the Bloomington City Council. There is so much that's good about our town, and with effective leadership, we can make it even better. I have been told that I am sometimes too quiet. Well, I'm a listener and do not need to be the loudest voice in the room. I'm a collaborator and know when compromise is helpful. I'm a visionary and can see what our town could be, our city could be in 5, 10, 20 years. Leaders are communicators. We are respectful and we instill trust. We build relationships and teams. My cousin provided me with this quote: "Leadership is not a position or a title. It is action and example." I look forward to answering your questions tonight. Thank you.
And next is Kevin Lauer, and you have 1 minute for your opening statement.
Well, thank you as well, and I'm pleased to be here this evening. I disagree with the direction that the city is going. I forecasted the current recession that we are currently in some 3.5 years ago. I could actually see it prior to that. We've had a significant number of job losses, and our median income has dropped. I am of the mind that we need to tighten the belt a bit more and pay attention to essentials, and that's the reason that I'm here. I got involved nearly 10 years ago because I could see what was happening to many of my neighbors and friends in my own neighborhood on South Hill. And as I have walked the neighborhoods and gotten in touch with people, and I think I'm very in touch, I have realized that it's more severe than it was. Thank you very much for having me.
All right, and we come to the next candidate, Terry Renner. Your opening statement, please.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor to be mayor for the last 4 years, and frankly, I think Bloomington is making great progress on virtually every front that I promised as I ran 4 years ago. We went from having an F in transparency by the Illinois Policy Institute to an A+. We have regular open houses. If you want information, I'll make sure that you get it, unless you're suing us, of course. Now, in addition to that, we have made great progress in leveraging our economic assets, whether it's Hy-Vee in an abandoned strip mall, whether or not it's the new Empire Crossing, whether it's Carmike Cinema, Green Top Grocery, downtown Bloomington. We are taking advantage of our assets moving forward. We're growing the economy and making Bloomington a much better place to live, work, and play. And obviously, we still have streets and infrastructure problems, and we have put 300% more money into that over the last 3 years than we had in the previous 3 years. We have capital improvement plans, and we are making progress for the future to make Bloomington a model for other cities to follow. Thank you.
You're listening to a special Sound Ideas in a Bloomington Mayoral Candidate Forum live from ISU's University Galleries in Uptown Normal. I'm Willis Kern, and our next candidate, Robert Fike, it's time for your opening statement. Thanks.
Thank you, Willis. I believe the choice for mayor of Bloomington is really simple and really easy. If the city is progressing to your satisfaction, if you like more of your money being taken out of your paycheck in the form of taxes and fees, and if you like to see your money being wasted on frivolous, non-essential items, And if you like to see your streets crumbling before your eyes, if you like to see closed roads due to either a water main or sewer break, then vote for one of the established candidates right here, either Mayor Renner or Council Members Lauer or Howman. However, if you want someone as your mayor that was born and raised in Bloomington, is not a politician, has not taken one penny in campaign donations, but funded his campaign by himself, has new ideas and wants to investigate alternatives, then vote for me, Robert Fike.
Thank you very much. Ideas for questions for tonight's forum were submitted online at WGLT.org, and we're currently still accepting questions for our next forum with Town of Normal mayoral candidates. That's coming up on March 2nd. There are five forums scheduled involving Bloomington Alderman candidates and those seeking seats on the town council as well as mayor, and we'll wind it all up with our sixth forum for the two candidates facing off in the Bloomington mayoral general election. You can find a complete schedule at WGLT.org. That's also where you can submit those question ideas for these upcoming forums. Now, many questions submitted to us centered on spending and taxes. Pamela Lambert notes that the city's proposed five-year capital improvement program exceeds $330 million. $276 million in projects in that plan are unfunded. What do you think about this budget planning framework, and how and when would you propose paying for the projects in the program? And this question first goes to Kevin Lauer.
Well, I'm not of a mind that that is the appropriate direction that the city should go. I don't think that we can raise taxes and fees and expect our economy to grow. We have to understand that there's a limited amount of capital available to us unless we would somehow attract a very large employer. So we need to learn to live within our means. And that means concentrating on the essential services first, and then figuring out new ways to pay for non-essential items. And that may be by demand. Thank you.
All right, to Terry Renner, you're next. How do you respond to that question?
Well, certainly, Bloomington did not have capital improvement plans, which is, I've been involved in local government over 30 years. I've never heard of a metro city that didn't have capital improvement plans. And so we do have those now. Now, when you have the sticker shock of the price, that doesn't mean you pay it out of this week's paycheck or even over the next 5 years. If sewers last 100 years, if you float a bond for 30 years, you're still being fiscally responsible. And in terms of our finances are now stabilized. We have the second highest bond rating possible. We have a very low per capita debt. We have gotten an award for police and fire pension funding. We are in very good shape. We do have challenges, of course, with capital improvement because that was neglected for so long. But we have an assessment of it, and we have to make plans for funding that moving forward.
And Robert Fike, what about the city's capital improvement plan?
Well, I'm a fiscal conservative, so the first thing you need to look at is revenue. How can you generate revenue? I'm of the plan of cutting revenue in areas that can be cut. For instance, these studies and these consultants, I think we've got way too many of them. We don't need those. I think travel and company cars can be cut. We can investigate selling the Coliseum. Also, the fire station on Six Points Road, in which it's lost $2.3 million in revenue, we can look and see, can we sell that or use it for something else? Then the next thing you need to do is look at those capital expenditures and see, do we really need those? For instance, I have a do list and a want list. We need to complete the do list before we go to the want list. There's a lot of things as taxpayers here in this room in which you've had to tighten your belt and do without. And that's what the city needs to do. Unfortunately, they don't do without because there's an endless supply of revenue called taxes. But everybody has gone without before, and that's what we need to do here. Let's get our infrastructure in order here, and then we can look at some of the things on the want list.
All right, our next answer will come from Diana Howman.
Thank you. Yes, we have been neglecting our infrastructure for a number of years, and hate to tell your listener, but it's more like $400 million that we are looking at in the next 10, 15 years. Certainly bonds are one way of looking at some of these, but I do say that needs and wants are hard to address because a need for one person is a want for someone else. A park for someone who has a home may not be a necessity. Someone who lives in an apartment, a city park is certainly needed for recreation and for children to play. So it will take some creativity from the city council to address how we're going to pay for the infrastructure needs going down the road. One of the areas that I think we can really look at, it won't be a short term, but it'll be more of a long term idea, or not idea, but long term, is economic development, bringing in more people, more businesses to the community to help spread out that tax need. Thank you.
You're listening to a special Sound Ideas in a Bloomington Mayoral Candidate Forum live from ISU's University Galleries in Uptown Normal. We're moving on to question number two now. Mark Austell submitted this question at WGLT.org and wants to know, if you think taxes are too high, what areas of the budget do you consider unnecessary waste, and what specific line items would you cut to allow for reduction in taxes? And that question goes to Terry Renner first.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, essentially, we are always searching for ways to save money, whether or not we can combine operations with public works and parks and rec, et cetera. And I would ask my other mayoral candidates, because I haven't heard anything specific. I'm glad this question has come up. What do you want to get rid of? Essentially, we are delivering the same services to the city of Bloomington that we were doing 5 or 10 years ago, and we're doing it with 100 fewer employees. The fact is, we have 750 equivalent full-time equivalent employees today. We had 850 full-time equivalent employees at the peak in 2009, incidentally, the year where we almost were not able to make payroll. As we're moving forward, we have reserves. We come in under budget every year. And we are, as I say, in a situation where we're financially strong. We did, in fact, when we had the structural deficit, 4 days into the fiscal year, I appointed a budget task force that clearly leaned right. There were no seats for labor. There were 2 seats reserved for the Chamber of Commerce. And they came up with the same kinds of issues. They said, you can make some cuts here and there, but there's no pot of gold out there. Unless you want to radically alter the extent to which you provide services to Bloomington. So let's say, and I'm not advocating this, obviously this would be disastrous, we abandon parks and recreation tomorrow. We just let Constitution Trail sit. We let everything just sit and rot. That would save $7 million out of a $210 million a year budget. So our biggest priorities are police, fire, 911 service, and public works. That is the case. I don't know what the frivolous spending is. I'd like to hear it. Thank you.
All right. We'll direct the question next to Robert Fike.
Well, I think with your cuts, there are several of them that you can do. I mentioned the fire station on Six Points Road being a revenue generator and possibly selling the Coliseum. But the studies, we have to cut the number of studies that we do. We're almost a laughingstock of Central Illinois with the amount of studies. There was $70,000 that was commissioned for a study to design Welcome to Bloomington signs, and the council was very happy that they got the company that designed the Walt Disney World sign. Now, $70,000 doesn't sound like much, but when you add it up, it starts making a pretty good amount. The other study that just happened here recently was $160,000 for a company out of Champaign to look at the departments at City Hall and determine which ones need to be moved to the government center. Now, if we can't do that, we've got some serious problems. I think the first thing you want to do is look for the boxes and the space and then move accordingly. So there's a lot of, with these studies, I call those frivolous because they're really not needed. And if we do need a study, we can use local talent.
All right, thank you. Diana Hellman, what areas of the budget do you consider unnecessary waste, and what specific line items would you cut?
Wow. It's hard to say what is unnecessary. We've already heard from several or from the other candidates. I liked the concept of Mayor Renner's task force that he established several years ago, but it was lacking one group of people around the table, and that's our employees. Our employees are the ones that know how we can, how and what can be cut and how we can do that. They're out there doing the job every day. We did not ask them for their input. HR is doing a study right now to compare our salary and benefits to other municipalities and other organizations to see how we compare. We may be higher, we may be lower, we might be just right, but we're at least looking at that because salaries are one of our biggest expenses that we have. So in terms of what we could cut, there's no department we can cut. We need our police and our fire departments. We need our public works departments. We need the support departments like HR and administration. So we need to look internally to see where we can perhaps reduce, but certainly not cut items from our budget.
All right, and your answer to this question, Kevin Lauer.
Well, number one, we need to prioritize, and the mayor does do a fair amount of that by talking about public safety. There's actually some areas in our public safety units that we might be able to make small investments and over time recoup and actually make some savings there. Same thing with our water department, streets and sewers. We do have a plan to repair many of our sewers, but if we can stay ahead of our streets and sewers before they fail, we can actually save money into the long term. Same thing with our solid waste program. There are no easy answers here, and the mayor is correct about that. There are thousands of areas that we may have to look at very, very surgical and unique areas where we will have to reduce some of the things that we've done in the past. I mentioned things on demand. We are funding and subsidizing a lot of entertainment in the city of Bloomington, a lot of very nice amenities. I'm not sure if folks want to do without those, but we may have to put a price tag on them and actually pay at the door. In other words, if we're going to subsidize the Coliseum or the BCPA, those folks should be paying for those at the door if we're going to continue to have those. And I don't want to get inside each one of those organizations and tell them how to do their operation, but I am going to say this is the line, don't cross it, just like a business.
Thanks for choosing GLT and Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kearney. You're listening to a special live broadcast of a Bloomington Mayoral Candidate Forum, co-sponsored by the McLean County League of Women Voters. We're coming to you from Illinois State University's University Galleries, live from Uptown Normal. Now it's time for question three. It's along a similar theme as the one you just answered. Some of you have made specific proposals for savings. There have been proposals to cut taxes, including property and sales taxes, though the mayor really has no direct authority to cut taxes. Others say selling buildings would generate revenue. Others say avoiding TIFs and tax hikes will firm up the overall economic base, adding stability to the economy. What are your specific ideas for just saving money? And how can you assure voters that you can get enough support on the city council to pass them? And this time, the first person on the list is Robert Fike.
Well, the first thing I want to do is hold the line on taxes. I don't think we need to increase the taxes any more than where they are right now. The mayor did create a budget task force. I would like to see that continue. I would like to see more people involved in government. So if we could have that put into operation again with people in there, that helps look for things that we may not have. But there's a lot of things that you can do with the Coliseum, for instance. That's $1 million a year that we subsidize that. And I know a lot of people have said, well, who are you going to sell it to? Well, we don't know because we've never investigated it. What I'm trying to say is let's investigate to see if there's some buyers out there. On the West Coast, a lot of the sport teams will take over these Coliseums for their teams. Because that way we can end some of the corruption. I think you get some corruption there because the city's in a lot of different things, but they're not good at running anything. The only thing that they're good at is police and fire protection. They're good at garbage and bulky waste pickup, and I wouldn't want to touch those budgets at all. In fact, with the police, you may have to increase it when crime increases.
All right, thank you. Next on the list to answer that question, Diana Howman.
Okay, thank you. I don't see taxes going down. I know that there was a suggestion of cutting our sales tax back to where it was. That would be not just awkward, but we cut our sales tax. It's not going to keep people from leaving town, which has been suggested that it does. Taking $20 million out of our budget would certainly be a critical aspect that we would find very difficult to make up. I mean, which firefighters do you want to cut? Okay, how long are you willing to wait for a fire truck to come to your house if your house is on fire? So we really don't have a lot of opportunities to do cuts. In terms of the Coliseum, under its new management, I see that breaking even in another 24 to 36 months. We don't quantify what it does for our community in terms of economics. People that come to events at the Coliseum, 35% of them are from outside the Bloomington Normal area. They're coming here, they're probably buying dinner, maybe a tank full of gas, doing some shopping while they're here. So we don't know specifically what it's adding to it, but we do know that it is adding to our economy going forward. So there are things that we need to make maybe more profitable, but certainly cutting taxes is not going to help us.
Kevin Lauer, what's the best way to save the city money?
Well, there's a number of areas that we're going to have to make some tough decisions. And one of the biggest things is that we're going to have to look at where we are with our budget and admit to ourselves that we cannot increase it. And that is very tough from the labor side, especially in the state of Illinois right now. And so I'm not really going to get into that, but I think that there are some management areas that we can look very closely and try to handle things a little bit differently. Certainly on the operational side, we have some non-essentials, and we may have to decide that we're just not going to be able to fund some things right now. We need to grow our economy. We need to stop the regressive taxes and fees that we have ventured into in the past 2 or 3 years. There are folks within our community that just cannot afford any more, and we have to understand that they have to be able to afford to live here. So there are some tough decisions, and we're going to have to look at our departments, and we're just going to have to tell folks, look, you know, the zoo should not be in an expansion mode right now. It is not something that we have to do right now. There are a number of things that we do have to do, and we do have to fund public safety. We do have to fund our water department. And there are places that we should be funding in street sewers and water that can save us money over time. And so those are some very poignant priorities that we have to pay attention to, but funding an additional building for the BCPA is not one of those.
Terry Renner, you get the last crack at this question.
Okay. Just in some of the clarifications, first of all, we have had lots of discussions every time I went to my first several U.S. Conference of Mayors about selling a Coliseum. And any of the other metro mayors say the same thing as real estate agents and others, in that you're not going to do it unless you lose a lot of money. And so at the end of the day, we have the Coliseum. And as Alderwoman Howman noted, there are some economic positives on the side of the ledger. Most of the opponents are focusing only on the costs, but we do have to consider both. One of the things that we do have a downtown revitalization plan that we got passed about 3 years ago. We have a community visioning plan. Both of them call for a revitalized downtown and an anchor to help the Coliseum be more productive as we go forward. We have a new management company, and we're certainly optimistic that they are going to do a better job than in the past. So we're not in the business of managing, Mr. Fike, the Coliseum. The city doesn't manage it. It never did. Unfortunately, it was all done on the city taxpayer dime, and it was overpromised. So that is one of our challenges. In terms of consultants, we do have free consultants that we go to ISU and IW. Can we do more? I think so. But in most cases, when we've got engineering contracts and specialists, we need Farnsworth and Associates, or we need people from Chicago, or we're going to have to hire engineers and others on site, and we're going to have to pay their pensions. So sometimes when you're spending money on consultants, you're actually saving money in the long run. Again, at the end of the day, there are no free lunches. I would love to promise free lunches and be Santa Claus, but mayors actually have to deal with the real world.
You're listening to a special Sound Ideas here on GLT and a Bloomington Mayoral Candidate Forum live from ISU's University Galleries in Uptown Normal. I'm Willis Kern. All right, time for question number four. Now, this is a four-part question, but the parts are all short. Do you believe the city should sell the Coliseum? Is it okay to sell it at a loss? What should happen to the debt assumed to build the facility? And what should become of the city-managed Pepsi Ice Center since the buildings are physically connected? And Diana Hellman, you address this question first.
So we're back to the Coliseum, which many of us addressed in the previous question. Should we sell the Coliseum at a loss? No, I don't see that as being a prudent option for us. I mean, I've heard one person say we should just turn it into a jail. Well, come on, let's be real here. It's there. Whether you voted for it or not, it's there. We need to embrace it. It's part of our downtown entertainment scene. So even if we were to sell it, we still have the debt to pay. So let's keep it. Let's make sure that it's being run properly, which I believe it is now with VenueWorks. And if we stay connected with the Coliseum, then the last part of the question about the Pepsi Ice Center, doesn't matter because we're keeping the Coliseum as far as I'm concerned.
So. All right, Kevin Lauer, should the Coliseum be sold? Should it be sold at a loss? What should happen to the debt? And what about the Pepsi Ice Center?
Okay, well, I don't believe that we should sell a Coliseum, but we are going to have to draw a line, and operationally, it is going to have to break even, period, at least in the very short term here. We cannot afford to continue to subsidize public entertainment. The folks that are coming to the shows need to be paying for the shows, and I think that most of those folks can afford to pay for the full rent. What to do with the debt? We're saddled with the debt. We've got it. It's not something that I voted for. It's not something that I wanted along with most of the rest of the community. But we've got it. We've got to be responsible about it, and we've got to pay the debt. The Pepsi Ice Center is actually one of the more profitable entities in downtown. It's very, very popular. It's hard to get ice time. As a matter of fact, we have two ice rinks. We've got another one actually in the Coliseum, and it's been one of my issues. We have a youth hockey league that is buying ice by the hour from Pekin and a large amount of money. And there's no reason for that. So that's one of the things that I've talked to VenueWorks about is let's reinvest in our community. Let's at least meet the public good and try to take advantage of as much of that income as we possibly can. And I think that they're going to do that. I think that is the plan. And I plan to be watching. From an operational standpoint, overall, that Coliseum needs to break even.
All right, Terry Renner, should the Coliseum be sold at a debt? What happens to that? What happens to the Pepsi Ice Center since the buildings are connected? And should it? What about selling it at a loss?
I think the one letter or one answer, no. We have the Coliseum. It is definitely costing us money more than was ever projected. There's no question about it. There are lots of the contract, the management contract was a very bad contract. It did not protect the city. But we can't just look back. We're going to move forward. We're going to make smart decisions moving forward. We certainly already have with VenueWorks. Give you an example. In the past, 68% of the profits from the concessions went to the management company. Now it's 5%. So we are making better decisions, and we're protecting the city moving forward. But in terms, and I do agree with Alderman Lauer, that we need to go for the operating expenses to break even. But I don't agree that we, at times, should not subsidize entertainment. Now, does that take precedence over public safety? Of course not. If you do police, fire, 911, that's the vast majority of our budget. If you add public works, and you know, picking up your trash, as well as clearing streets, you are over 80% of our budget. And so we already have Parks and Rec and any kind of entertainment is a very, very small slice of our budget. When Chris Koos and I went to LA 3 years ago to try to convince people, hard-nosed businessmen and women, invest in Bloomington Normal, don't go to the most distant suburbs of Chicago. We got the lowest crime rate, best trained workforce, all these things. Nobody asked us anything other than first question. What do you have to offer millennials? That was the core question. They didn't say, you know, how pretty are your sidewalks? Or, wow, do you have nice smooth streets? Obviously, we want those things too.
All right,
but if we want to
grow
the economy, we have to deal with amenities and quality of life.
We'll move on to Robert Fike. What should happen to the Coliseum?
Yeah, I'll give you four answers. Yes, yes, pay the debt and keep the Eye Center. In 2004, there was a referendum, and it was on whether to build the Coliseum. It was defeated 3-1. At that time, it was a non-binding referendum, so the city fathers thought they knew better, and they built it anyway at a cost of $37 million. Now, we're paying $1 million a year for the subsidy on the Coliseum. What I'm saying is let's investigate. Let's look a little bit further than what they did in, was it L.A.? But again, L.A. and Cuba are two places I wouldn't let officials go. That's part of cutting the expenses, too. Also, we've got a claim that the this thing's going to break even in 2 to 3 years. Well, that's what David Hale said, 2 to 3 years. However, the chief financial officer for VenueWorks says it's going to be longer than that. Now, we've already given it 11 years. How much more do you give it? How much longer do you give it? The Central Illinois Arena Management, they skimmed concessions off there for the city. VenueWorks had an executive director that put personal airline tickets on a city credit card. So there is some corruption down there.
Just a real quick follow-up for you.
Sure.
You say we sell the Coliseum, but not the Pepsi Ice Center. How do you do that when they're in the same building?
Well, we're going to sell the whole thing together. We're not going to eliminate it. When I say sell it, I mean privatize it. And we privatize the not only the Coliseum, but the Ice Center also. You go downtown Bloomington on Washington Street on Friday evenings, and you can see a line of people getting into the Castle Theater. So privatization does work. It just has to be checked on and see if it's something that's viable as an option.
Okay, I appreciate that. We're talking about downtown, so let's stay there. What role should downtown redevelopment play in helping to improve the city's overall economy? And what role do you think the mayor should play in this process? And Kevin Lauer gets this question first.
Well, the mayor is the leader of the city. I think that Bloomington has spent much too much time concentrating on our old downtown and ignoring, at the same time, many of the facets and the assets that we have as a community. There are a lot of things that center around many different areas of our city, and we're not paying attention to the periphery. And so I'm not of a mind that we have to have new urbanism. I'm not of a mind that we have to have it now. I'm not seeing the demand for it. That's where this ideology comes from, that we have to center everything on our downtown and let it grow from there. Downtown left our old downtown 50 years ago. I was here riding around in the back of my dad's station wagon. And believe me, with a grandfather in retail that was actually in charge of the Montgomery Wards that we have to worry about right now, that building at Front and Center Street, it was a subject across the dinner table. He did not like Eastland Mall. But we've got Eastland Mall, too, and it's struggling as well. We've got to concentrate on many different areas of our community.
All right, Terry Renner, what about downtown and what role should the mayor play in this process?
With all due respect, I disagree with absolutely everything Councilman Lauer has just said. Our downtown is our cultural historic core. One of the things we're seeing is a great inversion. People in the 21st century throughout the United States, in some cases throughout the world, want to move back into downtowns and historic neighborhoods that are walkable, that are viable, that are sustainable. And so I think that's the main means by which we achieve our growth for the 21st century. We have had a downtown plan. We got that passed about 10 months after I was mayor. That plus the Route 66 Visitor Center, once we got that funding gap, there was an incredible increase in serious private investment in our downtown. But in addition to that, we're not just doing that. Kevin, I would say you go to Hy-Vee. We've got that. We worked with them. You have the Ovation Cinema. We've got Green Top Grocery. We've got Empire Crossing. We are looking at underperforming areas throughout the city. Economic development is a constant attempt to grow your local economy. It's not just downtown centered, but downtown is critical.
All right, Robert Fike.
Well, downtown's kind of near and dear to my heart. I worked down there with my brother, who owned a small business for several years. First thing you got to do is clean it up. You got to clean up the downtown area. One of the ways that you can do it is by having the liquor commission, and again, I'd want a commission and not a czar, in which you have people that will serve the community on this panel. But if we can get the bars to have 51% of their revenue from food, you're going to see a turnaround downtown. We've got to make it safer. There's a lot of homeless people down there that are committing crimes. We need to find them a home. We got to find them some shelter. We got to find them some help. The next thing we got to do is make more convenient parking for the customers. I don't know about you, but there's several times where I'll go around the block two or three times and then I'll leave. So you've got to get more convenient parking down there.
All right, Diana Hellman, what about downtown redevelopment and the mayor's role?
Okay. Certainly downtown redevelopment is critical, not only for downtown, but radiating out from downtown. I do disagree with the mayor, however. I feel it's misleading to say that we have a plan when we have at least three non-prioritized documents that we as a council have not sat down and looked at to say, this, we're going to do this first, second, third, and fourth. We have a great artist community downtown, over 30 artists and residents downtown. We've got great history. We need to embrace that and use that to our advantage in attracting businesses to downtown. We've got several areas downtown that are in play right now. Certainly the Front and Center building, which has been under discussion for a long time, the Pantograph building, the old high school on Washington. There's a number of properties that could give us a jump start in terms of getting our community, our downtown going. And I think we need to work with not just the people that live and work downtown, but with all the community to find out what would bring them downtown.
Thanks for choosing GLT and Sound Ideas. I'm Willis Kernan. You're listening to a live special broadcast of the Bloomington Mayoral Candidate Forum, co-sponsored with the McLean County League of Women Voters. And we're coming to you from Illinois State University Galleries, live from Uptown Normal. Civil rights issues can affect how local communities like Bloomington Normal are governed. The visibility of groups such as Black Lives Matter, Not in Our Town, and Stand Up for Social Justice, among others, has increased recently. Now, among the five candidates, some of you on social media have made disparaging remarks about some of these groups. Others of you openly take part in their activities. What is your position on these groups and why? And the first person to get this question is Terry Renner.
Thank you. As mayor, you are mayor of everybody. And so you can't make disparaging remarks about certain groups. The thing that I can also tell you is every time I go to the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and they have two a year, there are always several panels on police minority relationships. We are not alone. We in many ways have probably problems that are nowhere near what most other cities do. That doesn't mean that we can't improve upon that. And we've had some recent data which shows that. So, in fact, I have had several meetings with some of the Black Lives Matter, Not in Our Town people just in the last 10 days. I had two today, in fact. And so we can come together to understand, where the police are coming from. And there was one gentleman who says he has narcolepsy. He wanders around his neighborhood. Well, if the police involved in community policing understand that, they know he's not suspicious. This is not an unusual activity. He's not going to be stopped or frisked, regardless of his race. So mutual understanding is the thing that is really critical, and that's why I'm very, very supportive of community policing and citizen engagement so that they also understand the changing nature of law enforcement. Law enforcement people today have to be social workers as well as policemen.
Thank you. Robert Fike, what about your position on socially active groups and why?
Okay, as a firefighter for the city of Bloomington, when we went out on a call on the ambulance or the fire truck or engine, everybody was the same. We didn't look and see what color they were, what sex they were, how old they were. We treated them all the same. They all bled red. And this is something that we just have to look at. They're all the same people. I mean, there's all lives matter. I hate to see some of the groups put down a certain race because all lives matter. They're all important. Now, I wouldn't have had a discussion because I think discussion is very, very important, but I wouldn't have had a discussion with the police chief in Black Lives Matter in which he could only answer yes and no. That is not a discussion. And so we need to get over that so we can discuss things. Now, the police chief is one that we have to listen to because he's the one that's on the front lines.
All right. Thank you very much. Diana Hellman.
Thanks. I'm certainly pleased that the organizations you mentioned and other organizations are more active today than they were, especially before the November election. As has been said, all lives matter, and I think we have an obligation as not only as elected officials, but we have an obligation as citizens of our city. All of us that are in this room, everybody that's listening, we have an obligation to respect all people, whatever they bring to the table. Their concerns, if they bring those to us, we need to be listening to those and looking at how can we address these problems. Look at potential solutions and then look at processes that we can use to achieve results to make sure that everybody in our community is respected and respected day in and day out. Thank you.
And finally, Kevin Lauer.
Well, one of the things that I think we need to realize is that we do have a very caring and open community, and that is a very big asset. An awful lot of national politics is being pushed on many municipalities and many towns and cities across our nation right now. Bloomington has always been a very open and caring community. We have just recently passed a tax increase that I didn't disagree with, that 0.25% for mental health, and trying to do something with our jail system treating people appropriately, and I think that our sheriff is on the right track. I think that our mental health professionals and social services in the area are working very hard in that manner as well. So I don't think that we've got the problems, and I think that we're probably nipping a lot of things in the bud ahead of time. I do agree with the current push with the police force to work very hard towards community policing. I've spent time with our police chief and some of the cadre as well as our fire department. And I will tell you folks, we have some of the top-notch safety personnel in the country.
All right.
I am highly, highly
Sir, thanks. Your time is up. Thank you for your answer. A couple of questions submitted centered on historic preservation. Patrick Cortese wants to know, what is the responsibility of the city to preserve and protect historic homes and landscapes? And Robert Vasquez asks, how will you ensure and promote that historic Bloomington continues to thrive and bring new businesses to the area? And Robert Feit gets this question first.
I think it's important to recognize and keep historic homes within the community. My wife and I traveled over to Paris, and there's houses over there and buildings that have stood for centuries. It seems like over here we tear them down after 30, 40, 50 years. It would be nice to keep the culture of Bloomington alive in these buildings and to see them flourish. And downtown, it's nothing less than a historic area. I used to go shopping down there with my parents, and it's something that I would like to see improve. I gave some of my suggestions there on improving it. Another place that I didn't have time to mention, the front and center building is a disgrace. that gentleman comes and buys buildings in Bloomington, and then he sits on them to make money.
All right, thank you for your answer. Next, to answer the question, Diana Hellman.
Thank you. Certainly historic preservation is important to our community. When you see some of the beautiful homes and other buildings downtown and in the near downtown area, it really adds to the flavor of our community. I'm pleased to see that several of the neighborhood associations are leading by example. They're taking information from our comprehensive plan and using it. They're setting out yard signs that give information about their buildings in their homes. And I think that we have a great opportunity to expand on that, find out what they're doing, how they're doing it, and encourage other neighborhoods to do the same thing. And in terms of bringing new businesses to the area, that certainly should be part of our economic development plan when we have one. Thank you.
Kevin Lauer, how important is historic preservation in Bloomington?
Well, I think it's very important. It's very important to most of the folks that have grown up here and intend to stay. And so that's really our core. I'm actually the only alderman and elected city leader that lives on the west side. And in one of three in an older historic home. I live in a small cottage on South Hill. I'm very, very proud of South Hill. South Hill's come an awful long way, and even in the last 10 years. We've had a number of folks that have moved in and restored their homes, and mine is not unique. It was built in 1922. I have walked the community and talked to folks, they're very proud of the homes that they have restored. And so I think we can encourage that. We can work with our Board of Realtors, who is very adamant about that as well. And one of the things that they asked me 4 years ago is, what can we do to help you? And I said, do what you do best. Come into my community, come into South Hill, and help me get some homes resold.
Thank you. Terry Renner, same question.
Absolutely. Very, very critical. In fact, I renovated mostly myself two homes in Bloomington, historic homes as well. It's really critical for the character of our community. And in fact, the part of that is code enforcement. When I was elected mayor, there was only one case the city of Bloomington filed in circuit court against somebody's dilapidated property in a decade. Now we have an administrative court within the city. We can haul them in within 72 hours, and it's not oriented toward fines, it's oriented toward fix up your property so that we do not have dilapidated areas of our community. And as that does include downtown, and I would also just disagree again with Alderman Hammond fundamentally. We do have a downtown plan. It was passed before I appointed you to the council, but we also have a community development plan, and we are working those. And community development plans are fundamentally different, Diana, than plans in the private sector or nonprofit organizations. It's not box checking. It's the most successful plan in Chicago. They have 25% of it that they accomplished in 100 years. It's a very, very different process than in nonprofits or in the business world. Thank you.
You're listening to a special live broadcast of Sound Ideas in a Bloomington Mayor's Candidate Forum, co-sponsored with the League of Women Voters. I'm Willis Kern. Last year, the council adopted a complete streets designation for Bloomington. According to the National Complete Streets Coalition website, these are designed and operated to enable safe access for all users. Andrew Guile of Bloomington wrote in and notes the location of the West Side Aldi and the Walmart across the interstate highways and wonders, as mayor, how will you work to implement complete streets and protect vulnerable road users from dangerous situations? Diana Hellman, you're first.
Thank you. Yes, we did adopt a complete streets program, and it will be used when we are looking at the infrastructure, the roads and sidewalks as they are redone over the next few years. Certainly, having safe streets is important. Safe streets to drive on is important, but we have gotten away from thinking about people other than those that just drive in cars. The 1900s, people walked 7 miles a day. People today, they're probably lucky if we walk 700 feet a day. But people are getting back to walking, they're biking more, and so we need to make sure that everyone has is safe, whether it's in a bus, car, on their feet, or riding a bike. Thanks.
All right, next to answer that question, Kevin Lauer.
Well, I'm actually against the Complete Streets agenda because it's very, very expensive, and I don't see the demand from the public on it. We're $400 million behind on our infrastructure repairs alone. We need to concentrate on what we have first. And then if there's a demand for it, I'm all about it. But we're not seeing a huge ridership in our bus service, and they've redesigned it, and we've actually got problems with the service that folks had been used to. I've got people walking up to 1.3 miles each way just to get to the bus stop right now on the south side of Bloomington. That's not excusable. I'm sorry. It's something that we really need to work on. We have to be very strategic about the safety, and certainly having some bike lanes in some certain areas to allow for folks to come and go is good. But to have it on every street is unrealistic. It's just not something that Bloomington is designed for, and we will impede on a lot of people's private property if we push to install all of this. It's a lot of things that folks don't really realize. If they go to cmap.illinois.gov, they'll understand that exaggerated curbage, additional bike lanes on every single street, and street furniture is far more than we can afford.
Thank you. Terry Renner, what about complete streets and pedestrian bicycle access to places like Walmart and across Veterans Parkway
streets,
and the highways?
I absolutely support it. And just to clarify, it means that's the multimodal future of American cities worldwide, and not just in America, and that is accommodate cars, pedestrians, bikes, and mass transit. And in fact, Mayor Coos and I and the mayor of Portland, Mayor Hales, we co-sponsored a piece of legislation that was passed unanimously by about 300 of the nation's mayors at the U.S. Conference of Mayors last summer. There was not a single dissenting voice. They know that that's the future. And it does not call for bike lanes on every street. That is absolutely not what Complete Streets is about. And if there's not demand, this is the time where a mayor and us to stand up and show leadership, to explain to people why. If you don't, in the short run, think that we ought to have Complete Streets, this is what the future is going to hold. And that's why, moving forward, we have to have a complete streets policy. And we have, actually, the best was rated last year. Our metro system here, our Connect Transit, was the best small metro system in North America. So we have a very mobile workforce, and I'm very proud of that, and we're making progress. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Robert Fike, what about complete streets and access via bike and pedestrians?
Sure. I think I'm probably the only candidate up here this evening that uses his bike primarily for transportation, because we are a one-vehicle family, and unfortunately my wife took that vehicle. So I walk a lot too. I bike up to Lake Bloomington. I don't lose that much weight because I always have a couple cheeseburgers at Green Gables. But here's the main thing. We have to look at the cost on it. If it's cost prohibitive, we can't do it. We need to concentrate on the infrastructure. However, if we can get it in within the street or the program without that cost being there, then I'm all for it. But on Washington Street, you can't just paint bicycle lanes on the pavement without widening it. You're going to have problems. You're going to get people that are going to hit bicyclists, or the cars are going to open up into them. You just can't do that. So that's my thought on the complete streets.
All right, thank you. We have a little more than 5 minutes left in the program, so we're going to move to the closing statement part of the program. And what we're going to do this is that we'll go in reverse order from the opening statement, which means that first up is Robert Fike.
Thank you, Willis, and thank you to WGLT and the League of Women Voters for having us here tonight and for everyone that showed up. February 28th is the consolidated primary for Mayor of Bloomington. It's the only thing on the ballot. Early voting has begun at the Government Center in downtown Bloomington. I used to be an election judge. I know turnout's not going to be very good. It never is after a general election, and especially on a primary. So I'd like everybody to please get out and vote and to pass it on. Tell your friends, your neighbors, and I would certainly be honored to receive your vote for mayor. And if you need more information about me, I'm not that big of an IT guy, but you can go to Robert W. Fike for Mayor on Facebook, and I've posted interviews and other things. But it's nice to make an informed decision before you go to the polls. Thank you.
All right, and Terry Renner, your one-minute closing statement.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think we've made great progress in our community over the last 4 years, especially in transparency, also in fixing our streets and infrastructure, a 300% increase in street resurfacing. We now have capital improvement plans. We are attracting businesses, not just in downtown and downtown revitalization plan, but we do have a vision. We do have a set of goals for the future, and we are achieving them at, I think, a very good pace. Now, I'll acknowledge nothing happens nearly as fast as I'd like. In fact, nothing ever happens as fast as I'd like it to happen, but we are moving forward. Google last year named us the digital capital of Illinois. We've gotten this year 6 awards for livability. In fact, one that I like from the Huffington Post says, one of the 11 cities you never thought you'd live in but should, as well as for new college grads and other things. So we've got external validation of us moving forward. And I certainly would encourage you to vote on February 28th. People aren't used to voting in February. I appreciate your support, but Bloomington is on the move. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And 1 minute for you now to deliver your closing statement, Kevin Lauer.
Thank you, sir. I got involved because I fully believe that Bloomington deserves better. We have to understand that it's more than just the municipality. The municipality is in great shape, but the economy is not. And we have a big effect on that. I am committed to rescue Bloomington from an impending financial and structural crisis. I can see it. I forecasted the downturn in our economy 3 years ago. I am the consensus choice of the citizen as the best choice for representation of the city as a whole. Based on my voting record and standing up for the people, I know the issues. I can see the flaws. I have a vision to get the city back on track, which is where the citizens need us and want us. As mayor, I will have the ability to reverse the current course and take Bloomington in a place that both support and maintain a stable Bloomington from the foundation up. I can provide a commitment from local government that the citizens need and expect. This will allow and invite optimism and growth and additional development.
All right, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. And 1 minute now for your closing statement, Diana Howman.
Thank you, Willis, and thank you again to the WGLT and the League of Women Voters for this interesting hour of discussion. We will certainly continue to provide excellent public service. We will improve our infrastructure. We will strengthen our relationship with the town of Normal to be more effective in our attracting new businesses to our community and businesses that pay a minimum of living wage, if not better. We'll continue, include more people in our decision-making process, whether it's expanding the Liquor Commission or expanding the town hall meetings that we have had but haven't had very many recently. So we need to get more community engagement. So I ask for your vote on February 28th so we can work together and help Bloomington meet its full potential. Thanks.
Thank you, candidates, for taking part in this live on-location edition of Sound Ideas and the Bloomington Mayoral Candidate Forum, co-sponsored with the McLean County League of Women Voters. We are accepting questions for the upcoming Normal Town Council Forum, which is March 2nd, and a forum for Bloomington Wards 1, 5, and 7 alderman candidates. That's on March 14th. Those questions will be accepted at WGLT.org. 3 other forums are also scheduled. You can find them listed at our website, and you can submit questions for those events. WGLT.org is also where you can find this episode of Sound Ideas with help from broadcast technologist Travis Metters, events and outreach director Linda Healy, program director Mike McCurdy, and the McLean County League of Women Voters and ISU University Galleries Director Barry Blinderman. I'm Willis Kern. The Bloomington mayoral primary is February the 28th. Thanks to you for attending tonight and for listening. This is WGLT Normal, a service of Illinois State University.